Okay, well...
Alrighty, let's start. Let me fill in. What is it about? How... it is about the war, right?
Mostly. I mean, I'd like to get the main... well, first of all, this is the first word podcast, and we're interviewing Mrs. Dagmar Davis, who was born in Vienna, Austria, and has lived through some very interesting times. And so we wanted to give her a chance to tell her story and learn something about those times. Now, I believe you were born, I believe, in 1926, if I'm... 1924. So, when...
National Socialists... you were 9 years old when the National Socialists took control of Germany, and then, when was the Anschluss,
38? May 13th, 1938, was Austria Anschluss.
Okay, yes. So you would have been about 14.
Exactly, 14, yeah.
And then, were you, you would have been about 12 when Leni Riefenstahl's film came out. Did you ever see that when you were a young girl?
Yes, my mother smuggled me into the movie. I wasn't allowed to see movies then.
Oh, no.
I was too young.
No one could see movies?
Usually, all those type of films started off at 16. I wasn't 16 years old.
Oh, so did pretty
most
much...
Most of the time.
Did pretty much everybody see that movie? All your friends and everybody in the country? You think?
Could be. Yes, she was a very popular actress, yeah.
And did it make an impression? I mean, did it seem like a patriotic type of... did it stir one's feelings like hearing the national anthem would for Americans or something like that? Or was it more like a weird kind of...
It was a mixture. Uh-huh. I remember when I finally was able, looking later at these movies, it wasn't so predominant political. It wasn't. At least that's what I understood. That's the way I received it. Because, you know, we are not so educated. And my mother took the newspaper away from me when I tried to read it.
Mercy.
Yes, yes. Mm. I was 14, 15, she did not, I was not allowed to read the newspaper. So,
Mercy.
This type of upbringing we had. You know, we weren't that informed. And our parents didn't ever speak with us that we had political conversations. Mm. I don't ever remember that. Mm. You know, having this type of conversations. Whatever I got later in my years than this, is my own impressions. My uh-huh. information,
right.
You're looking at it. But I must say, when I look back at it now, that is a very mild receiving of everything coming. You know? It's, no. We were raised, we have been raised, you do as you've been told.
Uh-huh.
And you do not argue about it. You don't ever spoke back to your parents, you know, because I had a very bad experience just once. My father never laid hands on me, but there I got one. I ended up on the other side of the room.
Mercy.
I talked back to my mother, so.
Well, at least he defended your mother's honor.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's what a man should do, right?
Yes.
So were you living right in Vienna still at that time?
No, I was. My father was transferred in. Out to Wiener Neustadt. He worked in a metal factory that used to be a locomotive factory, but was transferred then, when after Hitler, to a Messerschmitt factory.
Oh,
he got buried there twice by the bombs.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
He was, yeah.
So, were you in Vienna when the Germans marched in. Were your family in Vienna at that time?
At that time, no.
So
my mother
moved.
Transferred. My father transferred already out to Wiener Neustadt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wiener Neustadt. That's still part of Wien, right?
Not anymore. No.
But I mean, it's nearby.
It's south of I don't know the kilometers.
Still in Austria, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. It's still Niederösterreich, what you call.
Yeah.
Lower Austria.
Okay. So what was the, now you knew when the Anschluss took place, did you have any, what were your parents, what was their impression of it? Were they
My mother
euphoric,
was
happy,
angry.
Anxious, angry?
One thing I remember very clearly is the newspaper came the 13th of March 1938. And she put the newspaper down and she took her fist, Hitler was on front, and she took her fist and said, now we get a war.
Mm-hmm.
This means war.
Oh, you think?
Mm-hmm. I'm still getting shivers when I think about it.
So that was in 38?
Yeah. And then our good neighbor, all of a sudden he came downstairs from the apartment and said, Herr Hitler, in your uniform. We never knew.
Oh.
You know, I mean, we just, our jaws dropped.
Because you weren't political, so.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
My parents weren't. I don't ever remember them discussing politics or anything like that.
Well, now, was Austria in, you know, Germany was in bad shape after World War I because of the Versailles treaties. So the National Socialism, you know, helped the Germans to rise up again as a people. But did Austria have a similar, or was it in better shape?
My experience always was, there was that talk that my father tried to go to work to Germany. It seems all the fathers who worked in Germany, the children had always better dresses.
Uh-huh.
You saw it. You knew exactly.
Oh.
Yes, one saw that. But my mother didn't let them go.
So they would work in Germany but just send money back?
Send money back.
Oh.
Yes. That was before Hitler took over.
Yeah.
Yes. That we knew, you know. But I was so young then, and I just came to my parents. I wasn't really raised by my parents, but by my aunt. But that's where we came, and these were the first impressions, you know. These children had these nice dresses always.
Interesting.
And I received some of them till laid down.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason I knew, because we were poor people.
So then the war started in 1939, I guess, right? So did life kind of go on, though, normally for people living in the cities at first? No,
yes,
you would have been
that's the way I received it. I didn't see any upsets or anything, you know.
Rationing or anything? It was just life cut.
Rationing came later.
Okay.
The rationing came later. Yes.
Well, that started in 42 or
43. Right? Yeah, when it really was hard for. I couldn't tell you the time anymore.
When did you get your first job?
Pardon me?
When did you get your first job? Was that as a telegraph girl right away, or did you already work? You worked at the bakery or something?
No, I'm supposed to be a hairdresser.
Uh-huh.
And my mother had already everything ready for, you know, the combs and whatever you need and your uniform and what have you and what have you. And there came, I had to sign up for, because I was 14, I was out of the preparatory school, you know, I couldn't go on. But there, the law was that you had to do a year in the country.
You mean national service?
Yes, Hitler claimed, I remember that very well, you have to know where your bread comes from. And that is, you had to work for a farmer.
Hmm.
And that you got 15 pennies a day.
Hmm.
15 pennies.
of the Reichsmark.
Yeah, that was Mark and Pennig.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sent to Buxtehude by Hamburg, by Stade.
Wow.
You never were allowed to be near your parents.
Oh,
and
wow.
At that time, we really didn't have any connections, because if you had good enough connections, you didn't have to go actually that far. But
as far as
the norm was, they did not let you. And there I was a year.
On a farm?
That was in February, yes, because I came back May, June after that. because they forgot to keep it. We were transferred, you know, with your little plaques here, and that's where you went. I had a very good job there. I had to watch a baby.
Oh.
You know? But I also got, you know, the clocks they had, these wooden shoes. I got such sore feet because that's what they wore over there, and that's what they gave me.
Even in Hamburg?
In Hamburg.
I think of that as Dutch, but they still do it in Hamburg, huh?
In Hamburg, yeah.
Interesting, interesting. And this was, what, 38, 39? 38 to 39.
Yeah, to 39.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, were you ever in the Bund Deutscher Mädel?
Yeah, Bund Deutscher Mädchen. Yeah.
Okay. Was that before?
Before.
Okay.
I was drafted. This was Bund Deutscher Mädchen.
Okay. And was that what sort of things did you do at those meetings?
Oh, that was just like you'd be in a girls' club.
Yeah.
You had
scouting.
I remember. Yeah, lots of scout. Yes, yes. We did some knitting, and they saw I knit very well, so I taught one of the other girls when you were 14, taught knitting, and we also had a gramophone, and we danced.
Oh.
When my mother found out, we danced, and she didn't like it. She said, "You don't go there anymore." But I went anyway and danced anyway, right?
Why did she not?
She just because there also were a couple of boys there.
How did the boys come?
Yeah, there were a couple of boys there.
What?
In the girls' club, you know.
What?
But they just stood at the door and looked what we did, you know.
So then they would dance with you?
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you know, the gramophone, and she'd sneak one in, you know.
But the leader?
That's all.
The leader would sneak one in?
No, all of us, we snuck one in, and the leader too, yeah. I mean, she allowed it.
She allowed the junger to come in?
Yeah, just one dance.
Huh.
Yeah, but it was very funny then. I felt bad afterwards. I said, yes, I shouldn't have done that. You know?
But everybody in Vienna dances though, right? It's the waltz, right?
You dance. Slow waltz.
But your mother, my mother just thought you were too...
It was a slow waltz.
Your mother thought you were just too young, probably?
Yes, yes.
To be dancing with boys?
Yes.
Very wise, huh?
Yes, but that's the way we were brought up. And, you know, we didn't think a thing about it. We didn't think... We weren't that sexually educated on what have you, mm-hmm. you know? In that time, I didn't even know how a boy looks. I had a twin brother, but I didn't know how he looks because you always talk kiss bad alone.
Mm-hmm.
And me too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way we were raised. Yeah.
Okay, so then in June of 39, you left the farm in Hamburg to come home?
June. And in the meantime, it was there 40 already? I wish I could remember the dates really more better. You probably can find out whenever Hamburg was bombed the first time.
Oh, that was 42, July 42, I think.
No, it was earlier.
Earlier? No, that wasn't. Was that the big one with the firestorm? Because
no, no, the first bombs.
The first city to be firebombed, but you know, destroyed.
It wasn't it.
Yeah, long before Dresden.
No, it wasn't done.
No.
Because I was in Hamburg with the baby, because the house was renovated in the country. That was Immenbeck by Buxtehude. I remember the name very well. These farmers, they had built another room on, you know, and renovated and so forth. It also could be when I think now.
Well, no, but I'm thinking.
That actually was a year later.
Well, I'm thinking they may have had earlier bombing.
In Hamburg.
They may have had earlier bombing runs that were not completely devastating. But then the one in 42, I think it was.
Yeah.
He's looking it up. But there was one.
No, in 42 I was back in Vienna again.
There was one where
I was in apprenticeship.
Where the British used the napalm.
Yeah, the napalm. That was awful. Yeah.
The whole. Yeah. Hamburg went down.
Yeah. No, not that then.
That
wasn't then.
But they may have had smaller bombing.
Smaller rates.
Yeah.
Know? Yes. And because I was in, they had to take me home with the baby. Because I watched there with her sister. She had a sister there in Hamburg. And that's where we stayed.
Well, now, how did that help farming if you were just watching a baby in Hamburg? Did that help the family to...
that was work? Just pro forma.
Oh.
You know, I had to do this year in the country.
Oh.
You know, that they didn't need me there because they had people
so
why did this, the farming.
Why did this family get so lucky to get a girl to help with their baby? I mean, why... Was it just anybody or was it somebody important?
No, just the ordinary farmer there. It was a big farmer.
So it was a farmer.
A very big farmer, yeah.
He was a farmer, but
yes.
He had an apartment in town also or something?
No, the sister lived in, a sister, he had a sister in Hamburg.
Oh.
Well, the big bombing occurred in the summer of 43.
Was it that late?
Oh, it's the summer of 43. That was when it was firebombed and just basically
That's
destroyed.
True, yeah. Because in 43 I already was drafted.
Oh, okay, so when were you drafted then?
Pardon me?
When were you drafted? Let's talk about that.
That was, I came back, when I came back, I was right away recruited for my aunt. She knew somebody, you know, the circles there on
uh-huh.
the court. They would take me in as a apprentice. And because I'm supposed to inherit in Wiener Neustadt from my aunt a pastry shop. So they put me in the gastronomy there in a pastry shop. And it was a very famous pastry shop in Vienna. And that's where I started my apprenticeship, being, you know, in gastronomy, because that is one field over there. That's the way you'll be educated.
Mm.
And
what was the name of the pastry shop?
Bredendick. On the Marie-Hilfer-Straße. When I went back, I couldn't find it anymore.
Oh, no.
And had the daughter or granddaughter has it now on, in the Schimmelgasse, 7 Schimmelgasse. I had been there, and I was so disappointed because where I learned, it was very important because the lady who helped me, we called her Tante Mimi, you know.
Huh. Right.
Old girls, we mm-hmm. called her down to Mimi. And she helped me getting out of, let me tell the finish. I had my apprenticeship there. And then in 1940, the end of 1943, it was 1943, February 23rd. This February thing has it with me in my life. That I was drafted. But the way the draft went was, I had Friday evening, you got the letter, Saturday morning, I'm supposed to report in a ammunition factory.
Wow. So the girl, all girls were also drafted?
There were two more with me. We were three out of one firm. But we all went... the other two? No, I met the other two then.
So not all girls,
yes.
Just some girls were picked at random or something?
No, that was me. And but they went already to the Nachrichten Company.
The newspaper?
Not newspaper.
Oh, broadcast news?
Telephone, telegraph, post, you know, because that's what I went afterwards. But... Mimi, she went with me on that evening. She said, "Dagmar, you're not going home now. We are going to the in the Burg. Talk to the." She was royal. She was high up, very well known.
This was your aunt.
She always had no. We just called her.
Oh.
She was my boss. But she somehow adopted me or whatever. I had a good relationship with her. It was just fabulous. And we went to the commander of Vienna, and we waited there. We went there, we got to the Burg 8 o'clock, and he came back from a meeting 10 o'clock, and she said, "Can you do anything? I don't want her to go and fabricate bullets to kill people.
Hmm.
Isn't there a way out you can help her?" That she... I had to be drafted. I mean, I had to do something.
Right.
I was 18. That was the age the culture. I skipped one, the Arbeitsdienst. Arbeitsdienst, they had these brown uniforms. I skipped them already because I had a bad ear. We still have it. But that I skipped already, you know, because you had to hear very well and what have you.
So you mean you would have had to do the farm service, then Arbeitsdienst.
Arbeitsdienst
then,
with 18.
Then, and then the draft.
And
for
then the draft.
Wow. And all young people must do this?
You were drafted, you had no choice.
But
you
was
were drafted.
Was it
they
based
told
on,
you, they called you, and you had to go.
Was it based on lottery, or did pretty much every, even, it surprises me that they wanted girls.
Oh, yes, the girls.
Later on, they started to use it. Early on, they wanted to keep life as normal as possible, but when things kept going on, then they had
yes,
to begin
right,
to...
Right. The women had to live alone, right?
More of the prisoners and...
There weren't too many men soldiers left anymore, I think. But
so the men were all used to the army, probably.
Yes.
So then the women were needed to...
It was the army who drafted me, also the army.
Well, let me go back a little bit. What was... Now, through 38, 39, 40, 41... Is what was your view of things? Was it were you just taking life as it was given, or were you thinking about the war?
That's the key. Day by day, what came along, you just lived.
So, did you consider yourself just a? To you, was it a patriotic struggle, or was it just somebody else's war that you had to bear through?
In general, usually. I did what I've been told.
So maybe it would be like for Americans that don't...
I couldn't imagine an American would live that way or take it that way, you know, and actually stand up. And I never remember that I had to stand up or like some did and prove that they believe in that. And I never did that.
So maybe it's kind of like with the war in Iraq and other wars that we have now. That people just keep living, and it's
that's
a war
right,
out there.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
most Americans don't even think.
That's just what I did.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't upset. Certainly, it upset me. Sometimes I said, "Oh God, the bombs!" You know, and what have you?
Right.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And why? My question always was why.
Yeah.
You know, we were too young, really, to just to. Think about it, and it had to be, and reason it, and so forth. No. All I did was just, why? You know? Why do men fight each other that way? Why has there to be war?
So you probably did not, as a young girl, you probably didn't know much about the communists in Russia, and the threat.
Except what Hitler in his 4 or 5 hours of speeches told us.
Oh.
You know?
Well, did you identify?
But you know what? We didn't believe it anyway. We actually, you know, we didn't take it serious. I mean, it went on your nerves because you were not allowed to speak on the radio. It had to be in the coffee house where I learned, you know, that had to be all quiet. You know, and if I wasn't in the shop because my training went 2 days in the actually in the pastry shop doing things, you know, and otherwise you are serving, you know, a waitress.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what you had to do. And because you had to get contact with the customers, with the people, you know, you'd be introduced to that. Because if you go into gastronomy, you're serving people. But different type of people, you know, you have to know people. So
you came in contact with a lot of people. First of all, try ask this. Did you, as an Austrian, did you see yourself as still an Austrian after 38, or did you view yourself now as a more German, pan-Germanic? In other words, did you think of yourself, was it your war, or was it Germany's war? Did you...
Because Austrians think of themselves as Germans at one level, right?
Yeah.
Right?
But, yeah.
But not...
No,
it
is in Austria, you just lived it, and you shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were one of the, I mean, you better didn't talk or had friends where you congregated on the, all this we didn't do. Except in Posen when I was, the only time I remember in Posen we had these blankets, the windows and doors, everything was shut. We had this radio. And that was when Dresden was found. We listened night and day, we didn't sleep. We had to go to our shifts, you know, but they picked us up anyway with the truck, you know, because that's the only time we wore a uniform, otherwise we were in civilian clothes.
Well, now you're jumping ahead, so
yeah,
you were in the pastry shop, but then you were drafted, and then that's when Aunt Mimi got you to go into telegraph.
And the general, he actually phoned around already in the city and so forth. He said, "You are lucky." Now that was a Saturday. He said, "Have a report. 8 o'clock in the morning. There's a course going now in telephone. You know, I don't have to go."
In a factory,
in the ammunition factory. I didn't have to do that. So that worked out fine. I just got myself packed and went there in the morning and I took these courses.
Now, your first husband's name was Herr Wagner, right?
What was it?
Herr Wagner was your first husband, I believe?
My first husband, yeah.
So had you met Herr Wagner yet by this time?
No.
Oh.
No, that was much later.
Oh, okay.
I was older.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So we're talking...
After the war, in 46.
So we're talking like 42 right now, that you were drafted to the telegraph, right? Or 43, what was it?
43,
okay.
Also February. February. I remember the event. February 23rd.
February was always a big month for you.
Yeah. And we congregated in Vienna, and we went to school, and after that, we were sent to Gießen on the Lahn.
Oh, that's your Gießen connection.
That's where was the HSNH, Heeresschule der Nachrichtenhelferinnen. HSNH, Heeresschule der Nachrichtenhelferinnen. And there is another course, and from there, you were then shipped out for Einsatz. What is that in English now?
I think they just leave it as Einsatz.
Einsatz is your dedicated spot where you're supposed to do your duty.
Right.
Einsatz.
So this was actually frontier type of telegraphy that you were doing.
Yeah. They sent us to Posen. That was Posen. But I don't know what it is called now, Posen. It's south of Warsaw.
Well, it's in Poland, isn't it?
Poland, yeah.
Yeah, now it's Poland. But was that part of Prussia, or was that always
No.
Poland?
At that time, it was, or everything was annexed. You know?
I know, but much...
was Poland.
But was that part that was annexed, or was that already Brandenburg?
No, that was annexed.
Or Pomerania, because... you know, several cities that are now Poland were historical German, like Stettin and...
That's the reason he took over, you know, Czechoslovakia and all. That used to be German, and
right.
The people there still speak German.
Right.
And when we came there, they still spoke German.
Oh, so even in Posen?
You didn't, yeah.
Posen was German-speaking?
Yeah.
Okay, so that would just be rearranging the borders.
Right.
Because then... Breslau.
I wasn't actually in a foreign country.
I was
in Deutschland.
Yeah, Breslau was capital of Schlesien, right?
Schlesien.
And then the capital of Pommern was, I don't know, maybe Stettin? Or
Pommern?
Danzig?
Pommern. No, Berlin is in Pommern, isn't it?
No, Brandenburg.
No.
Yeah. Berlin is Brandenburg. Yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter. But anyway, so Posen is sort of in between. Pommern and Schlesien, I think, right?
Posen, yeah, that's Schlesien. And that's Warsaw, and that's Posen.
Oh, so it's just south of Warsaw?
South of Warsaw.
Okay,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
So then the military,
not too far away,
the army set up a base in Poland?
Yeah, there was, we were in the transport Kommandantur, where the transports shifted, you know, from the east to the west.
Okay.
Or from the west to the east.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we teletap there. And sometimes, yes, we also, if it came to KKK, this is a type of geschlüsselt, secret.
Oh.
So you ended up... You never knew what you typed, but...
coded.
You had to type very correctly, otherwise the code, they
right.
opened up the mm-hmm. other side, you couldn't encode it.
Right.
You had to be very careful.
Now this
and also with the very front, we communicated with the very front. And then you realized, when you, a Feldfernschreiber, a field telegraph, whatever you typed, you know, the white strip it came out, it got this way, and then you know that you were at the front. That was an extra type of fernschreiber, telegraph you had.
Oh.
Yeah, that wasn't the ordinary one you said. It was an extra one, and that's what when you communicated there.
Hmm. And this began in 42, then you were
43.
43. Okay.
That was 43, yes.
Now, it wasn't long, another year or a little bit more before the front became, the Soviets were moving in toward eastern Poland. And
January 1945, 23rd of January 1945, we were taken out by Panzer, because the last Panzer, because the Russian order, you heard it already in the back, they took us.
Out
of Poland.
You could hear the guns?
Pardon me?
You said you could hear the artillery?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you actually rode on tanks or just...
On tanks.
You did?
In tanks, on tanks. Because the train, we put like a table like that, everything, our because we had all our civilian clothes with us, you know, and we put the suitcases on there and did get it to the train station so that can be transported. Well, we only got to the train station and that's when it stopped. Because what we had on our bodies, that's the way we got out there.
Wow.
The train just left that far.
You just missed the train?
Pardon me?
You mean you just barely missed the train?
Yeah, no, but it went only that far. And then the train stopped.
Oh.
That's it. And that's when the Panzer. They took us for some miles. And then I remember they unloaded us again. And there was this track of people, you know, in the Planwagen, in these things. And they took us along. It was January. It was so cold. And I slept in a pigsty.
Mercy.
Overnight, it was so warm. It was so warm. We had no food, and these people gave us food, you know. They
farmer?
Just helped us, yeah. They just helped us along, you know.
Now, were most people coming on foot from the east? Did you see a lot of...
The tracks, yes. But we were lucky enough after the Panzer had to fight again, so they had to unload us. This track took us along. And that's the way we actually went to Berlin.
Wow, all the way to Berlin?
As far as Berlin.
Wow.
And the first thing we knew in Berlin, we had to go on the ground again because the bombs.
So as you're moving from Posen, what's going through your mind? Obviously you're scared and you're frightened. Was it?
You will be surprised. We won.
No.
We were so used to geächt. Geächt.
Geeignet?
Geächt, that means if you mark something, you know, and it sits there, and it is something sure, it holds.
Oh.
geist. We were so used to it.
That's G-E-E-I-G?
Geist. G-E-E-I-C-H-T. Geist. It means you were thoroughly situated, thoroughly proof.
Solidified?
Or you were just
hardened?
Used to it. Hardened.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Geist. Hardened.
Okay.
Hardened.
Because an eicha is an oak tree, I think, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is that related to the word?
Yeah, yes, yes.
You're made like a strong
yes.
Oak tree?
Yeah, oak tree. You know, these years we had in back of us, because when we were in Bozen, we only had this little mound, and there was a little something down into the earth, what we had as a Luftschutzbunker. We really actually didn't have a cellar or anything like that. And when there, and it was, you could tell for sure when Posen was on to be bombed, the holidays.
Oh,
we were standing outside and we watched the bombs come down.
It was on holidays in Posen?
Just on holidays.
Because, you know, not to get ahead of the story, but the bombing of Dresden was on a holiday also. It was the carnival.
Right.
What do they call that?
You know that? I don't remember.
Yeah, it was
that
the,
you just told me, yeah.
The children but were in the costumes.
My God.
Yeah. It's told by the story is told by the man that wrote the Slaughterhouse Five.
Right.
I forgot his name, but yeah. But anyway, getting back to Posen, so...
Now, did they have the children... Now, were there many children in Posen? Or there's the native children, but did any of the officers bring their children to live with them there? Or did they mainly stay in their homes back in Germany?
No, I've never heard of that.
Okay, so there. This is...
No, I've never seen it, no.
Now, what about the residents, the German residents of Posen that were there before the war? Did they migrate with the Panzers, or did anybody stay in Posen when you left, or was a town?
No, it was just us, or the officers and so forth. We saw them in their cars. You know, they had their cars and their ladies, and that really enraged us, because we had been told, well, you are good soldiers now, you stay to the end and so forth, and they took off.
Wow.
Yes, that was the order. That was the order.
But so the citizens
but
of
our Unterführer said, no, you're not staying, we go home. Hmm. And that's just when he organized us and just tried to, you know, because it was our ship was supposed to stay there to the end. And he said, no.
So the citizens of Posen did not leave, most of them. They stayed there while the Soviets came.
Or did they leave too?
Some, I wouldn't know who these people were in the tracks. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you about them. That's what civilians.
Yeah, well, a lot of them came from White Russia. Some of them came
also
from the Baltics.
Yeah, so right. So I couldn't tell you that.
But it wasn't a general. But not everybody would have left, though.
It wasn't a feeling that everybody was leaving necessarily.
No, no. I didn't have the feeling.
At least at that time, maybe later they tried to.
I couldn't tell you that. No. I didn't have the feeling that everybody just packed up and go, no.
Well, if you were hardened and didn't feel frightened, did you or your companions feel sad?
No.
Did you think that this was the Panzers were going to make a last stand and stop them, or did you think that it was inevitably going to march all the way to Berlin?
No, we knew that's the end.
No, you did?
Because, you know, there is such a thing as underground. Mm-hmm. And that what told us when we sometimes closed everything up and listened to the radios.
Oh.
That's the end.
But you were geiked.
War is finished. We just were glad to know that this is the end.
But you
I remember that. I remember that very clearly. That is the end. You're going home.
So when you got to Berlin, it wasn't the end. They made, that was January, but it wasn't the end until to
no,
May.
No, no. When I got to Berlin, I remember I had this terrible throat. I had a cold. I was so sick. And I said, and there were two more girls from Vienna, and we just went home to Vienna.
Well, how were you able to do that? Because I was sick?
Because, yeah. And also the doctor, there was this doctor, and he said, well, you know, for you it's better you make it home. The war is finished, you know, and that was afterwards, that, yeah, you really, everybody knew the war is finished.
So what month is this then, that you leave for Berlin and go back to...
But I went...
What was that, in March, February, 45?
That was January.
So this is
because
January.
The end of January when we went out of Posen. But the dates I cannot tell you. I think it took me 3 weeks, actually, you know, to...
So it's maybe February.
Go in a train, and because there the trains still were going, but you always had to jump out because there were bombs. You had to jump out the train, go in the ditch.
Wow.
Yeah, that just was daily life. We took the way it came. You know?
So then when you get to Berlin, is it very do you still need your papiere? Your papiere were in Ordnung?
I didn't have anything.
So everything was starting to...
I had my uniform on, so they knew.
They knew.
Here, you know.
So then the doctor just...
Because that's what we had.
So the doctor gave you an excuse to go to Vienna. Back
yeah.
To
he said, no. He did not give me the excuse. He just told me, go home.
Oh, and you could just do that easily?
I just did it.
No papiere.
In that time, just things were... Not so sure anymore, you know, because we were on our own.
Mm. That was because you were sick. So that was a great, looking back, it was a great blessing that you were sick, because you didn't want to be in Berlin at the end.
No, but I didn't make it home. I only made it to Weimar, because that's where they transferred from Gießen. Gießen was already, I think... Gießen was already American taken over there. How was that there?
It's very possible. It's near Frankfurt.
In Weimar. And that's right, in Weimar. And we just were this group, our shift, seven girls. And I think seven we were.
So?
Yeah, we got to Weimar. And because we were told that's where the HSNH is now, Heere Schule der Nachrichtenhelferinnen, that's where they were transferred. And, well, we said it's a home too, you know.
Oh, so you, even though the doctor recommended you go home, you stayed with the other girls.
We were this group.
And then?
We just stayed together.
And then, so you were trying to move in the direction of Vienna, but
yes,
you weren't, really just a one-way ticket all the way home.
Yeah, down south. But in the meantime, I found out that my parents, the Russians were not there yet. Because I got later down, because unsere Hauptführerin, you know, the captain of the group or whatever, she took us, I recollect this again. And this is funny.
That's normal.
It comes back. We went to Weimar. And in Weimar, I was engaged already.
With Herr Wagner?
No. Krüger was his name.
Oh, Krüger?
Krüger, yeah. I was engaged.
Oh.
And
oh.
He went from... He's a Gießen... I met him in Gießen.
Okay.
And he was in the SS.
Uh-huh.
And I remember he was so sad because he didn't want to be in the SS, but his father wanted him to be in the SS and so forth, you know. And
was he in the Waffen-SS or another?
Waffen-SS, yeah.
Do you know what division he was in?
I have no idea. I forgot this. I probably then, but I knew it.
Totenkopf?
Das Reich?
It's Waffen-SS.
So you don't remember? Was he?
No, I don't remember really. But he once his parents got bombed out and killed on December 6th. They had this terrible raid on Gießen. they got killed, and I remember he coming to Posen visiting me, and I couldn't get a furlough. They just didn't give me a furlough. So, but he came, and he was extremely sad about that.
So was he fighting mostly on the Eastern Front? Do you know where he was?
Yeah.
Where
did
he see?
I remember on the Eastern Front.
Do you remember
because
more specifically?
Because in Weimar, let me go back to Weimar. In Weimar, somehow he searched where this group of girls went, and their unit was somehow near. He, with his general, all of a sudden the boat stood in front of me, you know? And that's where he found me. And that's where he found me, right. And he introduced me to the general and so forth, his superiors there.
He introduced you to a general?
With the general. He was a general. He had this... Boom, you know.
So what was the rank of your fiancé, Kruger?
He was a lieutenant.
Lieutenant, okay.
He also had a Ritterkreuz.
Oh, he did?
He had the Ritterkreuz. And as we told us goodbye...
Wow, he's an immense person.
He leaned to me. He gave me his mother's rings then. And he said, keep them for me. He said, but Dagmar, do not go south. Go someplace else. Do not go south. Do not go Vienna. You know? But we went there anyway. But he said, if they come, you go north, you go to Gießen again. And that's where I ended up also after the war. You know, the Americans were nice enough. The Thatchers brought us wherever we wanted to go, you know? But
from Vienna, you mean? The Americans?
Yeah, because we left in Vienna. We went down with our Unterführerin because she said, I take responsibility for you from Weimar then. I take responsibility because... But she had also orders that we should form again for another course what is held in Vienna. But I remember very clearly I had to lie about my parents are not in Vienna. They are evacuated because we were not allowed to go there. And she said, Dagmar, you just lie. She said, we are going home, you know.
So you got back to what month? So you got back to Vienna?
From Weimar to Vienna, yeah.
Was this before the Soviets were in Vienna? Or
before.
Before.
Before. Let me finish that because we ran away from there again. On the Laberg, we're supposed to have another course. Teletype was just our little group was chosen to communicate with the airplanes. You know, that crazy these people were. Mm. They thought they could do something.
Mm-hmm.
They actually sent us to Vienna. We actually deposit our whatever we had left there, what they gave us in Weimar, they gave us some clothes again, you know. and that exactly, I remember, was Easter, 1945, when we got there, because I had a hand of honor, say, because my Unterführerin, she said, you want to go see your parents and so forth. And I went home, yes, Buchengasse 101, I remember the way. And told my, oh, that was Easter, and I told my parents, well, I come later back again, you know, because she was with me, and she said, let's go back now, sign in, get all things ready, and then we come home again, you know, the next day. I said, okay, well, because my aunt went out to the country to get the Easter rabbit. And so I could eat Easter dinner with them, you know. And we went back to Laberg, the station where this stays. It is a hill. It's the Laberg. This is a hill in Vienna. That's where we're supposed to be educated again for the new whatever, you know, communicate teletype airplane. Telefunken.
Germany at this time really didn't have an air force.
Yeah. yes, that's what we're supposed to do. But when we came back to the Lahrberg, they were waiting for us already. We had to ship out. So I never, guess when I came back to eat my Easter rabbit, 1968.
Oh, mercy.
From 1945. Yep, sweetie. Yes.
Oh, so, okay.
That's what it is. And then we marched again, and we got as far as, they said, well, in Bad Ischl, there is another
base.
We could check in and so forth, so we would be taken care of. But in Bad Ischl, when we got there, we got some, they said, you are released, they gave us the papers, you are released from the army.
Okay.
Well, now this is April or May now. Do you remember the date?
Was right after Easter, 1945.
Late April. Probably find that with a Google search.
Yeah. Try to find this date out.
Easter could be March or April, depending on the moon. So we'll find out, though.
Oh, yes. That was right after, because that I remember so well. This is something, you know, that sticks with you, but I couldn't tell you the date.
Right. So you basically marched westward to another base, and then they gave you your discharge papers.
Because Georg told me, he said, do not go into Vienna, the Russians are too close.
Also, Herr...
because that's what it actually was, that's what we ran away from.
Herr Kruger is George Kruger?
Pardon me?
Georg Kruger? Was it...
Georg.
Okay.
Kruger.
But my fiancé, we were.
So finish up that story then. How did that you never ended up ending that man?
You never married.
What was that?
You never married Herr Kruger.
No. Let me tell about it. It was my first and only love.
Finish that story.
It's still very hard for me to take that happened to me. That is... And... okay, we went back then in Bad Ischl. And in Bad Ischl, we just went on our own. We slept in hay, you know where they have the hay?
Haystack.
On everywhere. Just to run away, because the American came then in Bad Ischl. They took over. We were there. Now, one of the girls... what was her name? I don't ever remember her name, but the face is really burned into my mind. She had an aunt there, and that's the reason we stopped there. She said, we go there, we also knew we'd get some food, you know, take a bath, and so forth. And then, that's where the American. She positioned us in the cellar. You know, we had you put sandbags in front of the window because we thought, well, the Germans are stupid enough to be if they fight and so forth. But you know what? In the evening, we still were afraid, and when we woke up in the morning, the Americans were there. And it was all quiet. You know, and that's when we went out, and finally, and there was a, which I found out then, there was a concentration camp close by, and I remember we walked along the Salzach, that is the river there, and they came toward us, and they had these striped shirts. I've never seen a prisoner in my life or what anything, you know.
Wow.
They had the striped shirts and said, oh God, they let the people out of the... we were. That's where we were afraid. They let us out, you know, these people and we girls, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we really were afraid, you know. But you know what? That was the concentration camp, what I found out later. These were people from the concentration camp the Americans let go.
Wow.
You know? That's what they were. They were not really criminal prisoners. That was a concentration camp.
Political prisoners.
Politics, yeah.
Yeah.
And
how did they look?
Were they skinny?
Oh, quite skinny, yes, yes. I remember that. I remember, yes. Yeah, they were
how did you look?
So fragile, very fragile. And I still see them.
You
very seldom I think about this thing.
You're probably
we got as far as Oberndorf because our group of girls, we said, well, we cannot go home, but we know we can go to Germany, you know, because Dale told me, come to Gießen after the war is finished. Don't ever try. That's what he whispered in my ear. He couldn't do this in front of his general there. Mm-hmm. Or major. No, no, he was a very high up.
His commanding officer.
He was a very high up officer. Because Georg insisted, well, she ought to be here now. You know, they hold off all these communications to the military. We weren't the aware of. But, and that's what I tried to do. And we got as far as Oberndorf.
Where is that near?
That is up in Oberösterreich, the border.
Okay.
Of,
to Bayern?
Yeah, Bayern and that's where the Americans cut us, you know, because there it was instituted giving just every mile there was controller. You had to show your papers.
Oh.
You know, yeah. Since we had the papers, you know, we were citizens again on foot. And that's when they caught us. They said, and they saw also what we had on. We were
uniform?
Army, yeah. Because there were quite a few girls who wanted to go home to Germany.
Of course.
You know? Because obviously it sent it there. There were the Air Force, mm-hmm. the Army, and whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. We all had uniforms on. And also when the Americans caught us, they put us in a camp.
Mercy.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we were in a camp. But we were in a very nice camp. Oh, they gave us the steamed soup and so forth. But you know what? There was one soldier who came and gave us white bread. Now, we didn't know white bread anymore, you know. He gave us white bread and orange.
Mm.
And we didn't know anymore what was an orange. You know, you forgot about it.
Mm.
But that I remember. Mm. There also has been where they situated us, there was this waterfall. And you could, in the back of the waterfall, you could sneak out of the camp.
Wow.
Yeah, but we did it. Oh yes, at night we went to the farmers and there was, we went to some field, I remember, and stole potatoes. Mm-hmm. And sat in among the potatoes chips. We were hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Just grab the remove the dirt and so forth and eat the potatoes there.
Wow.
And once we got caught. But far away the private office, I see you, you know. He saw us, obviously. That I remember so well. That's the reason I still always remember that waterfall.
The military man caught you?
No, the farmer.
The farmer.
The farmer, yes. And then we went right back again, you know. And then, yes, and then there was about 4 or 5 days we were in this camp. Then they grouped everybody and asked, where do you want to go? They took pictures and gave us another slip of paper. We were de-entnazifiziert. That's what it was.
Right.
De-entnazifiziert. We were not Nazis anymore.
Uh-huh.
That's why we actually were able to go every place then, and nobody would stop us, you know, but you always had to have that video.
So what did they do, put a stamp on your papers?
Yeah,
and said,
They loaded us on the truck. Where would you go? I said, Gießen, and I would like to get out on the Celtus Tor in Gießen on the Lahn, and that's just where they took us. Up the truck we went.
Wow.
Listen, look at this.
Oh. Yeah, we should probably speed this up now. It's almost an hour. So you get to Gießen, and I'm still waiting to hear the rest of the story about Georg.
Oh, Georg. Yes, I came then back to Gießen, and I went to his relatives to his aunt on Kugelberg, I remember very well, and they took care of me because I had to have a job in order to get a ration card. If you didn't work, you didn't get a ration card. And then I went to they got me a job in a health clinic, a dermal clinic, what was transferred to a castle type environment, castle in a castle, you know, Akabad, like evacuated from Gießen is a universitätstown, and they also hospitals are very very famous there and so forth, and that the health clinic. Was located in Flensburg, and that was a type of castle.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, the evacuations when everything was bombed, the hospital was bombed, so they were evacuated out there.
Okay.
And that's where I went then and had a job, and I waited when everything was done. So Georg would come back, you know. But since he was in the SS, he had to be very cautious. But he came back one night, and he knew I was out there, you know. But I couldn't tell the MP. Yes, he was here because they came asking. They were looking for him. But I lied to them. I did not, you know, tell him, yes, he was here. Because he then told me, he said, that my teeth sit still, tight, and I will be back. But afterwards they caught up with him anyway. And,
who, the Americans?
He had to go a year. They shipped him out to some prison. He had to stay a year.
Mercy.
But I don't know where he was, because he wasn't allowed to tell me or anything. He just telephoned me once. Well, he said, in a year I see you. But that's the last time I saw him.
No. What happened?
I don't know. Afterwards... Wait a minute. Yes. He came that year. And... He told me, he said, Dagmar, we cannot get married, because he had an application. There was another woman who was hiding him during the war, and he married her. Yes, but he came afterwards one more and said he was sorry what he did. I could have had him back, but I would have... interrupted this marriage, and that I didn't do. Because my son Wolfe was already born then. I had Wolfe then, when he saw me. Because my second husband, Wagner, I had to marry, but only to have a child. And then they did not deport me to Austria. I was able to stay in Germany.
Well, you had met Herr Wagner during this time? In Gießen?
After that, yes. Yeah.
After
Georg, yes.
After Georg told you that.
Yes, I met Herr Wagner.
And then Herr Wagner was living in Gießen. But he was from Vienna too, wasn't he?
No, he was from Gießen.
Oh.
He's born in Gießen.
I see.
So, that's the way.
So after the war was over, life eventually... went back to, maybe not the way it was, but it was a relief to you for it to be, just to be over with. You're just happy that part of it was...
Yes, we started from the scrap again. I mean, you didn't own a teaspoon anymore. Everything was... Herr Wagner, their house still was standing with bullet holes and granite holes.
Wow.
Yes, oh yes, yes.
Is it still standing now, his house?
His house is still there. Yeah, but My son inherited that because when he died, he had Alzheimer's. When he died, I was married already to Mr. Davis.
When did you marry Mr. Davis?
1957.
Oh, that was in Giessen also?
Yeah.
And he was just there as an American soldier?
As an American soldier.
Okay. Okay.
We got married there also.
So you had been divorced from Herr Wagner for several years by that time?
Yeah.
And Wolfie was with you?
Yeah.
Okay. And was that shocking? He was a black man, right?
Yeah.
And was that shocking for the people in Giessen at all, or was that considered normal?
No. When you're in Europe, it's kind of attractive.
That's interesting because
they think differently.
Was it kind of exotic?
Sort of, yeah. You think it's just
because
at that time. But in the meantime, opinions changed a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was that a openness to exotic things like that? It seems quite different from the National Socialist teaching of the racial solidarity. So the people were maybe swinging to the other direction?
Yes, I think so.
And they're thinking?
They changed. After that experience with the war on Hitler and what have you.
So it's almost
changed.
Like everything they believe, now they go to the other side?
But you know what? What I seriously think, really, I believe that the German peoples, they were more or less forced.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, but you never were able to read their minds.
Mm.
Because if you don't, you ended up in concentration camp.
Okay.
Right? I mean, that was life.
Mm-hmm.
That was the reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you didn't Heil Hitler, you ended up in the, and you don't ever spoke of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, or against it, because you never know who was listening.
Mm-hmm.
We learned to shut up.
Mm.
That's what we learned.
Mm.
People just shut up. And nobody expressed, actually, just the very, you know, who had probably a star or two or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ones, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But four, you know. And you just listened and turned around and said, well, whatever you thought was your thought. He couldn't read it, so.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the German, it was the minority, I really could, the way I perceived it, the minority of people who actually believed
okay.
in Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Enough to make it possible, but not a huge majority.
No, not that
maybe,
much.
Maybe
you had to. You had to.
Well, there must have been enough, like 20%, would you say? There must have been enough to make it
if
possible.
If I'm generous about that, say 25%.
Okay.
Just some people who really got benefits, high benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, in general, there was benefit with Hitler.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there yes. were benefits. There were, you did have a better life. And you knew if you worked, you had money to feed your family.
Mm-hmm.
Put bread on the table, as we always say.
Right.
You know? I mean, yes. But if you really believed in all that, whatever you heard on the radio from Hitler and so forth, I doubt, despite you had a better life, I doubt that everybody really believed it.
Mm-hmm.
Or would give his life for it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it actually was. You had to give your life,
mm-hmm.
yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think not everyone was really up to giving their lives,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right. No one. I mean, that would always be the
yeah.
case, I guess.
And I always remember my mother's fist on Hitler's face.
Because of the war.
That always went along the and that always said, she was right.
Well, do you have any further questions?
Well, not really. I mean, Herr Krueger spent most of his, as far as you know, on the time on the Eastern Front. Did he talk much about the front, or did you talk about other? He didn't want to talk about that when you were together, those occasions.
Well, naturally, somehow you followed the Nachrichten, you know, how these things move at the front and so forth.
It would be interesting to hear.
But on the other hand, we were too young, really, to grasp the danger and the real involvement in the ugliness or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, well, this is war, and we just took it the way it came.
It would have been interesting to hear Herr Krueger's first-hand account.
All the radios played it.
Probably didn't talk with his girlfriend about what it's like to be a soldier, you know, and things like
no.
that. It's more flowers.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I love you.
We were, I think we were too romantic.
Yeah.
In that age.
Well, I think
the age.
Soldiers never like to talk about their stories too much, it seems like.
No. No. I don't ever remember. We had friends, we had pen pals, you know. I had even two visiting me, they wanted to take me in this transport, they were the Air Force, in this transport. They celebrated my birthday. I don't know to this day how they found out that this is my birthday, and they come and celebrate and I got a cake. You know, that was a lot, you know. In that time at war for me, that was very exciting. But see, that's the way we were.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way we were. And I remember don't go in the transport machine because they wanted to take one of the flights, you know, shows, and I didn't go into because I was afraid. with their birthday surprise. And soon after that, all of a sudden you heard, oh, he got shot down. Mm. You know, these are the things. That's what I had a few. I had one pen pal. He came, their unit came to Vienna and they visited us then, you know. That was before I was drafted. That was when I was in an apprenticeship. But we were urged over pen pals, you know, you write to a soldier and so forth. And he came, and I remember he fell so in love with me.
Mercy.
Yeah, and he had red hair. But he was a lovely person. And you know, you stayed pen pals and so forth. And I refused to kiss him. Because I was much too shy of that, you know. He had to leave again on the train. We brought him to the train. We always were a bunch of girls. We never were alone, you know. And I didn't. And to this day, I said to myself, why didn't I do it? Because in a few months after that, we still wrote, you know. I got a letter from his parents. He wanted to meet me.
Wow.
Because he fell. He was dead.
Oh.
So they wanted to meet me.
Mercy.
So that's what our lives were in that time, you know? And coming back, all these little things,
yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
It's not so good. Yeah. I very seldom talk about the war. You know, just you have to tick me off with something.
Yeah, well, that's why we wanted to do this to, you know, get this recorded and for the world to know. All of these stories are important. They all add to the big tapestry picture. Well, any other last minute questions?
No.
I've always been asked writing a book about my life. In general, Yes, very often.
Well, Mrs. Davis, thank you very much for spending this time with us, and we'll continue the discussion at a future time. Okay.
Okay, it was my pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hope we didn't...